This is Building Bridges, your community and labor report, produced and hosted by Mimi Rosenberg and Ken Nash.
Later on, workers protest Puerto Rico's governor's layoff of tens of thousands.
But first, domestic workers need a Bill of Rights with Ajahn Poo, lead organizer, and Pat Francois, member, Domestic Workers United.
I'm a member of Domestic Workers United. I've been a nanny for the past 12 years. My former job lasted 6.5 years. During those years, I suffered a lot of verbal abuse. I have been put down, cursed at, and threatened with immigration. In 6.5 years, I have never had a raise or a bonus. When I would ask for these things, the verbal abuse would start. But it's hard when you have bills to pay and a family depending on you. That is why I humbled myself. The little girl that I was taking care of is a wonderful little girl. She needed me as much as I needed my job. That was another reason why I stayed. My job finally ended 3 months ago because I was verbally and physically abused by my former employer. Physical abuse for domestic workers. Hence the reason domestic workers as well as farm workers are exempted from the labor laws, so we have no rights, especially we cannot unionize. Hence the reason we is one employer to one employee. So nobody to defend us, nobody to give us that guideline. This is why we have a Bill of Rights and we're demanding to have our Bill of Rights passed so we can get respect, justice, also dignity. He crossed the line when he hit me. I'm seeking justice for what I experienced with the help of DWU. I'm here with you discussing what a people's agenda looks like. So in telling you my story, I believe that this agenda must be about justice and including passing the Domestic Workers Bill of Rights. I'm also speaking out for over 2,000 domestic workers who has been discriminated against and treated unjustly. I am the voice of 200,000 of us who give our hearts, who give our health to take care of New York families. We need respect, we need justice, we need a Bill of Rights, and we need it now. We need justice. What we need justice. This is injustice. To be slapped down, to be punched in the face, this is injustice. I am testimony of what happened here. I can tell everybody, and when I speak, ladies and gentlemen, I'm speaking from the bottom of my heart for 200,000 domestic workers plus, who take care and make it possible for everybody else to go to work when the day comes. The nurses, the doctors, the lawyers, the judges, and for all the kids to go to school as well. Anything go wrong, be responsible. The future generation is in our hands. This is why we need a Bill of Rights, respect, and the Bill of Rights. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen.
So I just want to build on some of the points that have already been said and talk about the work of Domestic Workers United and how it's connected to a broader agenda to try to actually build a people's agenda in the wake of the economic crisis. Around 8:30 every morning in New York City, you'll see thousands of men and women getting off the commuter rails on their way to work. Well, 3 hours before that, a large army of women of color got on the commuter rails to go to work so that they could leave. And they include women like Pat, over 200,000 as she mentioned, and no one knows who they are, who they're working for, but everyone knows that it's their work that makes all other work possible. And despite this work that they do, the important work that they do, they're excluded from some of the most basic labor rights. They're excluded from the National Labor Relations Act, which officially gives workers the right to organize, to overtime pay, protection from discrimination, occupational safety and health laws, and even from the definition of employee in the New York labor law. So what you have is an industry where anything goes. Employers do as they please, like the Wild West, and get away with it. In 2000, we started organizing. And in 2004, we launched a statewide campaign to establish labor standards for domestic workers in New York called the Campaign for the New York Domestic Workers Bill of Rights. We're now in our fifth year of this important battle that Pat talked about. In 2007, at the U.S. Social Forum, we convened the first national meeting of domestic workers with over 50 workers from 13 organizations in five cities around the country. And at the end of our meetings at the forum, we decided to form the National Domestic Workers Alliance. The National Alliance now represents 18 organizations in 10 cities, and we are building our capacity nationally to organize the over 2 million women who work as domestic workers in this country. We're establishing a national training institute, supporting new efforts to organize in cities across the country, and supporting statewide policy campaigns like the Domestic Workers Bill of Rights. And in fact, the California organizations are going to be introducing the California Domestic Workers Bill of Rights in 2010, building off of our efforts. And in fact, we were fighting for these efforts and were on this trajectory even before the economic crisis hit. Because the reality is that before the crisis, there was already a crisis in this workforce. And now, jobs are being lost at unprecedented rates. And conditions are worsening. Nanny shares, where workers are working for two and three households for the same salary that they were working for before. Wages getting cut, hours getting cut. And there's been a chilling effect that's compelling domestic workers to stay silent in abusive conditions for fear of losing their jobs. And there's absolutely no safety net whatsoever. No unemployment insurance, no severance pay, no notice, no nothing. And for live-in workers who live in their employers' homes, when they're fired with no notice and no severance pay, they're homeless overnight. Now more than ever, we need the Domestic Workers Bill of Rights, but we need so much more. We need a vision for a new economy and a new society. And we need to work to build the movement it's going to take in order to bring about that kind of transformative change. In fact, the crumbling economy and the urgency actually provides a unique opportunity to have a set of demands that cuts across sectors, movements, and organizations, under a framework of recovery, sustainability, and democracy for all. In fact, we need a global Green Deal that reflects the hopes and dreams of all people, particularly the poor and the working class. The reality is that the majority of the people are suffering and have been suffering in the shadows even before the crisis. So this is a moment for all of us to think big and bold about new initiatives, new relationships, coalitions, systemic policy demands that truly inspire people to turn their fear into action. We need a global Green Deal that includes unemployment access for all, including undocumented workers. We need to create 20,000 jobs in community organizing for youth and workers of color. We need government subsidies for childcare, a real expansion on the right to organize, beginning with the Employee Free Choice Act, but extending much further beyond. We need to pass labor rights for informal sector workers, and let us not repeat some of the errors of the New Deal that allowed for exclusions of farm workers and domestic workers that prohibited the building of political power, particularly for the African American working class. When September 11th happened, the right wing saw it as an opportunity to move transformative change around their ideological agenda and platform. In fact, they had an entire shelf of policies that they attempted to move through Congress, seizing September 11th as an opportunity to do so. I would argue that this economic crisis, as much of a crisis as it is also a unique and historic moment of opportunity for the left, for the working class, to move a transformative agenda for justice through this window of opportunity, if we can get our acts together to do that. What's on our shelf? What can we move? What are we willing to do? What new relationships are we willing to build? In what ways are we willing to stretch and move beyond our comfort zones in order to step up to the challenge? Well, for us in the National Domestic Workers Alliance, we're building with five other national grassroots alliances, including the National Day Labor Organizing Network, the Right to the City Alliance, which organizes community residents facing gentrification and displacement, the Jobs with Justice National Network, Grassroots Global Justice, a network of community-based organizations that's helping to build a movement for global justice, and the Pushback Network, which is a group of grassroots organizations that do electoral organizing. We're all working together in a process called the Inter-Alliance Dialogue to try to stretch and have a grassroots voice and impact so that the voices of undocumented workers and day laborers and domestic workers and public housing residents and all of the communities that we represent in our organizing can be heard as these decisions get made, and that the visions and the hopes and the dreams of these populations can be at the table as these discussions happen. And I just want to end with a couple of things. One, that in times of economic crisis, do things always happen? The first is that unions get blamed for the economic crisis. Am I right? Have we heard it? UAW, the way UAW has been blamed? That, we cannot stand for that. And the other thing that happens is that workers get turned against each other. Black workers against immigrant workers, unions against non-union workers. We cannot allow for that to happen. Knowing that that happens, let us all make a pledge now that we're going to do everything we can to prevent those patterns and lean into this crisis in a way that lifts us all and moves the entire working class forward.
You've been listening to Ajahn Poo, lead organizer of Domestic Workers United, with member Pat Francois.
And that's from Jazz Zambia, Paoli Meijas, to get in the spirit of heading down to the island, that is the island of Puerto Rico next. 100,000 marched in San Juan to protest the recent firing of 10,000 workers by pro-statehood Governor Luis Fortuno. The march was organized by all of Puerto Rico for Puerto Rico, a new coalition that includes unions affiliated to Change to Win and the AFL-CIO, as well as independent unions.
The coalition also consists of community groups and religious organizations. Along with the firings, the coalition also protested Law 7, which would privatize public worker jobs and allow the government to discard contracts already signed with labor unions. On top of that, Governor Luis Fortuño is planning to cut 30,000 more public sector jobs as well. We're joined by Benjamin Forges, Executive Director of the Public Service Workers United of Puerto Rico, Council 95 of the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees.
Is really what is a bloodbath for workers. What in the world is going on? Tell us to begin with about the recent firing of 10,000 workers by Governor Luis Fortuño.
Well, the labor environment is very hot here in Puerto Rico, and this recent 10,000 layoffs that includes several employees which were convinced to resign in facing the threats of being laid off by the government and facing the government plans to lay off another 20 to 30,000 public employees. This is a plan to reduce government deficit in a very, very short time frame. Their plan is to reduce a fiscal deficit that is over $3 billion in just 2 years. One of the criticisms that we have been raising about Governor Fortuño is that it is too ambitious to reduce such a deficit, assuming that it is the correct amount of deficit. It is too ambitious to reduce it in just 2 years. And with this terrible economical situation, that in Puerto Rico is worse than in the States. In Puerto Rico, we are facing a recession that is lasting 3 years, different from the United States. So we have a more difficult economic scenario than in the States. And this plan on cutting government expenses will make the situation harder than it is. It will worsen the economic crisis, and we will not have any kind of improve in government services for those workers and poor that now need public services more than ever because of the economic crisis.
In addition, the governor passed a law in the legislature, Law 7, which would do numerous things, including voiding union contracts and encourage privatization. Why don't you expand on this and tell us what Law 7 would do?
This Law 7 is the frame for all these privatizations and the reduction in public employees and government expenses. So they passed this government obligation to reduce the government deficit in these 2 years. And it is part of the law not to allow the unions and the employers to renegotiate the contracts that expire during the next 2 years. So it expressly prohibits to renegotiate those contracts or to extend the contracts until year 2011. This is very, very difficult for public employees because it is also something that has nothing to do with economies. Not to allow employees to have a contract after the end of this of the contract, not to allow the employees to have a new contract is something that has nothing to do with economics. And we'll leave these employees without any kind of protection during all this period. We have been fighting against this. We have been trying that Governor Fortuño understand that it is impossible to have a serious dialogue with employees' representatives if there is not an understanding that government employees need union representation and needs to organize the discussions about their future.
So where does this leave us at in terms of the governor? obviously there's a profound antagonism, disrespect to the process of a labor organization and representation. But how serious, how severe, how antagonistic is this governor to the workforce of Puerto Rico?
It's not only a matter of one person. It's about a complete group of advisors that have been leading the Puerto Rico government policy about the economy and about the labor movement during before the governor started doing his job. He appointed this committee, which is called the CAREF, and is composed by industrials and bankers, and those are the main advisors of this government. And there is a complete antagonism between this group of bankers and industrials and the labor movement. Now, we are trying to start conversations with the governor after the march, the 100,000 people's march that we did on June 5th and was called the People's Assembly, the General People's Assembly. And after that, we could have a meeting with the governor to start conversations about how it's possible to have a constructive communication between labor movement and the government, looking for solutions in front of this crisis. Now we are expecting to continue conversations, but there are not complete commitments about what will happen with these 30,000 public employees that now are facing the possibility of being laid off.
Is there any possibility that Law 7 itself might be revised?
It could be revised and amended, but there is very, very little opportunity to eliminate the law. At the meeting with the governor, there was a commitment to amend Law 7 in order to allow the renegotiation or the extension of contracts covering public employees so that our members doesn't need to be without any kind of representation during while facing all the problems that Law Number 7 are provoking to our members. So we have that kind of opportunity, and that will be productive if we keep this kind of communication, because as you were saying, if there is no communication with labor movement, then there is no respect to the workers, and there is no possibilities of having any kind of dialogue or communication to look for solutions in front of this economic crisis.
Well, frankly, the thought of 100,000 people being out is raises for me almost the spectra of my dream, which still hasn't happened here, of a general strike at some point. But it's an enormous number of people. Where do you go from here, particularly with the spectra of 30,000 more layoffs? I mean, these cuts, these layoffs have been absolutely devastating. What happens now?
Okay, considering the enormous problem that represent 30,000 employees losing their jobs, we're focusing our conversations with the governor in possible solutions to help improve the government capacity to produce services and to pay the payroll for those government employees. Even when we think that there is a philosophical and ideological problem in this government and that there are motivations that are antagonists to the labor movement, we have been trying to discuss solutions that the government could not refuse to take into consideration. We have been raising that the Treasury Department has been neglecting completely about $3.5 billion on taxes that have not been paid by rich people that have been accumulating this amount of debt. It includes employers that have been deducting the taxes from their employees and have not been paying those taxes to the government. And the government expectation to collect those taxes is only for 10%. For all, that's completely irresponsible. And it is irresponsible to lay off 30,000 public employees while the government is not being serious about collecting their taxes.
Well, we're going to keep a close eye on this situation. We have been speaking with Benjamin Borges, Executive Director of the Public Service Workers United of Puerto Rico, Council 95, AFSCME. Thank you again for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Well, this has been Building Bridges, your community and labor report with Mimi Rosenberg.
And Ken Nash. And log on to our new website at www.buildingbridgesradio.org.